Hey, and hold on to your hat. We're going to have a conversation about leadership, about politics. Remember, we've been talking about having a series of conversations together about what it takes to help Montana thrive and prosper. We talked about infrastructure. Down the road, I want to talk to you about how essential people and education is to the future of Montana. We had a conversation with a political candidate the other day to talk about leadership, and our conversation on leadership continues today because we're going to talk about why Montana or how Montana selects the leaders we call our politicians. What does that process look like? What goes into it? What's the thinking behind who we vote for as our elected officials? I'm not going to figure that out by myself. I've got a great guest in studio today, John Binion, author of Big Sky Politics, the new edition. John's going to join us on Voices of Montana. Welcome to our audience today. Hope you're enjoying our conversations that we've been having about Montana's future. So much at stake now, it feels like, with where we're at economically, things going on in the country and around the world. Good for us to sit back and answer the question, are we hopeful for our future? And I have been arguing with you that there's some key ingredients that need to be done well in order for us to prosper and thrive as a state. And one of those things we talked about with David Smith and Allison Corbin with the Montana Infrastructure Coalition about infrastructure. Can't do what we need to do unless we have roads and bridges and all that infrastructure that's in the ground. And then we started a conversation about leadership being essential to our future as a state. We had a conversation with Riley Neal, who's a candidate for the U.S. Senate, that seat. That'll be an interesting campaign. We're going to want to talk to our guest about a prognostication on how that might turn out. I believe, just like infrastructure, we can't sustain and grow our economy without good leadership, principled leadership, smart leadership. John Binion's here today to tell us how have we selected our political leadership in the future, in the past, and what it looks like for our future. John, welcome to Voices of Montana.
Hey, Steve. It's great to be here.
It's good to see you again. You have not changed a bit. And it's been 100 years since I've seen you last.
Well, I appreciate that. It's great to be back in my hometown, Billings. It's great to be back in the studio. I have some fond memories being here and conversations past. So excited for you also for guest hosting.
Oh, well, thanks, John. I really appreciate that. I hear your son is 17
today. He is 17. I can't believe it.
My goodness. I remember having coffee with you downtown Billings, Rock Creek Coffee. I think your son was in tow. Just a little guy, I don't even know if he's walking around. That's how long ago maybe it's been since I had connected with you. And then you were doing wood carvings. I don't know. Are you still doing that?
I do. I get easily bored, so I have lots of hobbies.
And I had seen that you were doing one of those, and I wanted to send my son a piece of Montana. He was in North Dakota going to med school, and I thought, that kid does not get to do any fly fishing. And so I reached out to you, and you did a beautiful carving. He still has it.
Oh, that's great.
And so you are so talented, and you're an author times two. The book that you've done on Big Sky Politics, this is the new edition.
New edition.
What was behind the first edition and now the new edition? Why the update? Give us a little background and origin story of the writing of this book.
Sure. Well, the first edition was just, I was a big nerd. Okay. So like I was a big nerd like 25 years ago. I'm still a nerd, but I was very interested in Montana politics and the history, but there weren't a lot of resources out there. And so I just started doing research. I wasn't writing a book. I was doing research. I was in the Mansfield Library in the basement going through old copies of papers, going through microfiche and things like that. This is how weird I am. And so, sooner or later, people would introduce me to former politicians like Pat Williams, Tim Babcock, others that I was able to interview and learn more get from the horse's mouth. And so eventually people understood what I was doing. They're like, you should write a book. I'm like, book? I don't have the expertise to do this. But I got enough encouragement to where I did publish a book, and it came out in 2004. The last election that's in there is 2002. And when you're creating a book like that, you know, it's only 2 years before it becomes out of date. And so now it's wildly out of date. You know, 2002 is a long time ago.
What took you so long to do this again?
You know, a little busy. Yeah.
So the new book chronicles what time frame?
So the new book, the book starts out in 1945. There was a special election in the Eastern District. And of course, this was right as World War II was coming to a close.
Yep.
And so most of the book focuses in on how Montana voted for president, governor, U.S. Senate, U.S. Congress. This new edition has the Montana Supreme Court. It's got the makeup of the legislature. It's got the outcomes of some of the other statewide and regional races. And so it's got way more commentary than the first version because there's way more tools to research, way more biographies. What were the campaign issues, campaign finance information? So a lot more that I was able to put into the second edition, not only in the previous elections, but of course, updating them since 2002 all the way to 2024.
So you can see I've gone through the book. And yeah, don't take offense to this, but I thought, okay, is this just going to be data on all the elections? And I'm a little bit of a political nerd too. And I thought, no, we're telling a story.
Exactly.
We're telling the story of Montana politics right up through 2025. Very interesting story if you kind of read the thread. And I'm looking on page 3 and you have this statement here, and I want you to read that statement that's underlined because I think it helps describe the purpose of the book. And if you want to elaborate on that, that would be great.
Sure. Montana's political history has always been worthy of close attention that avoids flippant or inaccurate oversimplification of what it means to be a Montana voter. And that all came from, you know, after the 2000 election, you know, that was a pretty brutal election, right, with Bush v. Gore. And that was when we started to see politics a lot more just in the daily cycle and I think people obsessing over it. It was also the start of the whole blue state, red state thing.
Yep.
And of course, for Montana, for most of this book, we're picking Republicans for president. So people out in D.C. or wherever, they're looking at Montana, they're like, well, this is a red state. But if you go back and you look at Montana's history from statehood and all throughout, you could argue that actually we had been a blue state for most of our political history. And then what happened after 2002, when my first book had come out, we actually entered a time in Montana's political history where there was almost a Democratic mini golden era where we had a Democrat governor. We had Democratic U.S. senators. We had a lot of our statewide officials as Democrats. And so all of these labels that people like to put on Montana about, I think it really oversimplifies us in many ways.
One of the things you say early on in the book is that, and I may get this, so correct me if I feel like I've read the book and now I'm sitting in front of the professor having to make sure I get it accurately, but there's what might be called some distinctive traits in Montana politics. But in the book, you say those traits might be, I think you use the term dulling or changing. So
sure.
What were those traditional distinctive traits? How are they changing based on, if you look at this in the overall big picture, what are those traits? Remind us of those traits and then how might they be changing?
Sure. So, you know, you can't learn Montana's political history by reading a book about Idaho politics or Wyoming politics or Dakota politics. And that's because you got to go and look at who was coming to the state, you know, during territorial days, who was coming here when we became a state and things like that. And, you know, of course, Montana is in many ways the birthplace of labor unions. And so you look at the story of Butte,
yep,
Anaconda, things like that. The New Deal, you know, there were a lot of states that were solidly in favor of the New Deal, and Montana was one of them, probably more so than a lot of other states. And a lot of those things within the farming community, like along the High Line, the Golden Triangle, those were important aspects of how people were choosing their elected officials going back into the 30s and 40s. And there were remnants of some of those things. And so, and of course, there are times in our political history where things have been a lot more competitive, where Republicans have won. We, in our governor's races, we kind of switch back and forth between 16 to 20 year cycles of Democrats in control or Republicans in control. But for 80 years of electing U.S. senators from the 1912, 1914, all the way until Conrad Burns won in 1988, we had only elected one Republican U.S. senator one time. And so there's just lots of little things that would probably surprise a lot of newcomers to Montana.
Yeah.
It might even surprise kind of younger voters who are used to more like how our elections have gone on today. And I think that the pull of nationalization and how things have been going over the last 10 to 12 years, you can't overlook that. But there are remnants of that political DNA that still exist, I think, in our state.
So is it fair to say there are things we Montanans look for in a candidate, and fundamentally those qualities are the same? Is that, have I oversimplified that?
Yeah. So for example, you know, there's a populist streak within our nature. There's kind of an anti-big, whether that's not liking big corporations or not liking a big federal government. So there's kind of that suspicion, and there have been Democrat and Republican politicians over the last 20 or 30 years that have capitalized on that, right? I think if you look at Brian Schweitzer,
yeah,
for example.
That's exactly who I was thinking of. Yeah.
You know, in many ways, how he talked about things, the way he campaigned, is it too dissimilar than how President Trump has talked about some things? And so it's been interesting to see people capitalize on that. But what we've seen in the last 10, 12 years is really Montana getting pulled, just like every other state, the nationalization of politics that really makes us states lean a lot more red or a lot more blue.
So if you're out there and you think, oh, I want to, we'll talk later at the end about how people can get a copy of your book. And I'm going to encourage people to do that if you have any interest at all, because it just kind of opens your eyes to this political journey and that we've been on in the state of Montana. We've got a break coming up here in a minute, but talk very quickly about how the book is organized. So if somebody grabs the book, what can they expect?
Sure. So like I said, it starts in 1945 and it's kind of broken up into eras. And a lot of times it's defined by the competitiveness of the era. Sometimes there's not competitiveness. Sometimes like Republicans are doing very well. Other times it's kind of more of a toss-up era. Like I said, for the last section of the book that wasn't in there for the first edition from 2004 to 2025, there's two eras. There's a mini Democratic golden era in Montana, and then there's the start of what we're seeing is Republican domination, you know, starting in 2014 and a steady whittling away of Democratic support. And so each of the eras has a little summary at the start of that section that kind of talks about some of the factors, population shifts, industry makeup, other kinds of factors that could contribute to whether there was domination, political domination in those particular eras.
When we come back, I want to talk about the term statesman. Does that even apply anymore? But then I also want to have you think out loud with us about some of the characters in our political past that resonate, like jumped off the page. And naturally, as I was reading through that, I thought, that is a great slogan, or that is a, man, did they position themselves well? That is an interesting person in Montana politics. Hey, welcome back to Voices of Montana. We've just started a very interesting, fun conversation with John Binion. John is the author of Big Sky Politics, the new edition. But many of you may know John, also a former deputy attorney general, a graduate of the University of Montana, undergraduate and law degree there. Although I read that your wife is a professor at MSU.
She is.
How did you allow that to happen?
I don't know. We're both Grizzes twice over.
Oh my! But she's teaching.
And they called, they asked. So
there you go. And then John is also the executive director for the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation. And you get to travel the state of Montana in that capacity and probably interact with a lot of the folks that you interacted with in your political life and in your work in the Montana Chamber. And that's where I think you and I first met when you were leading policy initiatives for the Montana Chamber. Well, welcome to Voices of Montana today. We it's great to have you here. Talk to us a little bit, as you've done this fresh research on Montana politics, some of the characters that jump off the page for you.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of lifelong Montanans will know the name Mike Mansfield and might know a little bit about him. But we're getting well past the time where he served in the U.S. Senate. And one big thing is that he is still the longest serving U.S. Senate majority leader. So he is the John Thune, basically. Yep. But he did it over a stretch of time that was 16 years, a tumultuous time in our nation's history with the civil rights movement, with Vietnam, Watergate, things like that. But here was a quiet fellow. It makes me wonder, could this person ever be in politics these days? Because right now it's all about, what did you just put out on, you know, X, or, you know, what's the reel that you just did? There's a lot of that where,
or boy, you have to be loud and almost obnoxious to stay out in front of the news cycle every day.
Exactly. And that was the exact opposite of his character. So he would go on, you know, those Sunday morning shows, Meet the Press and things like that. They would have a whole list of questions that they were going to ask him. And they would burn through 30 minutes of questions in 5 minutes, because the guy would often just answer, yep, nope, maybe, you know. And it's just, you know, but he was a straight shooter. He had tremendous respect for anyone who had been elected from their state. So regardless of whether they were Democrat, Republican, he was a Democrat, firm Democrat, you know, did a lot of help in partisan elections and things like that. So no question he was a Democrat. But, you know, when people got to the U.S. Senate, the most prestigious body, you know, in the on planet Earth, it was something where he had tremendous respect for somebody that had been elected from their state, regardless of whether they're Democrat or Republican. And even when they were freshmen, you know, in an institution where you've got to build up your seniority and all of that. So lots of really fun stories about that. You know, he won handily most elections. His last election was a little bit closer, but still pretty hands down big victory. So that's somebody that I look at. Somebody like Tim Babcock, who became governor when he was lieutenant governor, and the Montana's governor died in a plane crash. His name is Don Nutter. So that put Tim Babcock into the governor seat, and he served almost two complete full terms. Here's a guy that I got to meet 25 years ago, that was just a true gentleman, somebody that I have a tremendous respect for. And again, it just kind of makes me wonder, wow, these people that are such pillars in Montana's political history, could we elect them to office today? I don't know.
Well, I you bring up Mike Mansfield. I think it would be fair to say, if you're going to refer to a statesman, which was a term used a lot and even an aspiration that politicians had. I served many, many years ago, and I remember that was important. You wanted to be considered thoughtful in your work and deliberate and caring and smart about the work that you were called to do. And to be considered a statesman was an important handle. And I think Mike Mansfield, others, I'm not going to, avoid, you know, I don't know what that list needs to include in Montana. I think there were and are other statesmen, but is that even a thing anymore? Is that a something we aspire to in our political leadership?
I think there are people that really try, and those are the people that are trying to keep the train on the tracks, you know, with our institutions, with our elections, with our governance. You know, there are people that, whether they arrive to Helena, they arrive to Washington, D.C., they're there to govern, and they understand that they don't have to love everything about what somebody brings to the table in terms of ideas. But there's a respect that that person came, was elected by their voters, and at the end of the day, there has to be things that come together so that we can run a country, so that we can run a state. And so I think that that's just important to keep in mind. I see people try and do that. Sometimes our primary elections keep people from being able to focus on those kinds of things.
Because you got to speak to that constituency that's going to have that primary vote, and they're looking at a list of, you know, I want to check the box on these four things, and so that becomes difficult. Are there, looking back at the 80 years chronicled in your book, are there lessons there that are important for politicians to understand even today, that ignoring them, they ignore at their own peril?
Well, one thing that's kind of fun that any lifelong Montanan can understand is the issue of the sales tax. And so going back to that, I was able to uncover the first election, the first governor's election where I felt like it was really an issue, where it was weaponized, and that was in 1948. There was a Democratic challenger. His name was John Bonner, running for governor. He had been attorney general that had resigned in order to enlist in World War II. So he came back and he ran against an incumbent Republican governor. And at the time, there were lots of states adopting a sales tax. And he was the first person to say, no, I would never support a sales tax. And he won in 1948. And then we see this issue come up again in the 1968 election. That was the pay more, what for. There was a statewide referendum in 1971 on sales tax. There was another one in 1993. But candidates are still talking about it even now. And we could see it even be an issue in 2028. And for the most part, when you pull on it, when you have a referendum on it, it's not so popular.
Yeah, it is not. I'm looking at your book on page 61. You have an image of that sign. There's no sales tax in good old Montana. And what I see our candidates doing on both sides is, I hate sales tax. Well, I hate sales tax more. No, well, I hate it more than you. It's like, who hates this more than, because it is one of those things that if you ignore that, it's at your own peril. Anything else that politicians shouldn't be ignoring politically in Montana?
I think, you know, you have to, especially now, you have to have a message that is very refined, simple. And I've seen successful candidates over the last 10, 20 years really do well when they have a concrete message that can be simplified. We can't have overcomplicated stuff.
Well, this is not Tom. Tom's taking a well-deserved break. I'm Steve Arviscal. I am honored to be the guest host of Voices of Montana. I'm equally honored to have John Binion in studio today, joining us for an interesting conversation about Montana politics. John is the author of the new edition of Big Sky Politics. And I really would, and I don't get a commission for this, I would encourage you, if you have an interest at all in politics in Montana, and it seems like everybody does, it's the topic of every coffee conversation nowadays, grab a copy of this new book. You will be pulled into a history lesson on where we've been politically. John, I think people would clearly say Montana's a red state. Do you think that's always going to be do you think going forward, there's just no question that's what it's going to be? Is that fair to say? I know in your book there's this reference to the schizophrenia in Montana politics, but have we now landed to this place of, no, we're a red state, like it or not, take it or leave it? What's your thought?
There's no question that red state fits Montana more now than it has in any other time in our history. We don't have any Democratic officials at the statewide level, regional level. Our legislature is Republican. Will it be that way forever? You know, the book is a story about, you know, the political pendulum swinging back and forth. There are some factors that even since the 90s have been pushing us more in the Republican camp. And as I mentioned, over the last 12 years or so, the nationalization of politics is putting every state kind of more firmly in one camp or another.
Absolutely.
To where you don't see a lot more swing states. You don't see split U.S. Senate delegations where states are sending people of different parties for their Senate seats. It's 48 out of 50 are locked in with one party. So we're just wrapped up in this nationalization. To the extent that nationalization continues, that people are kind of voting and saying, well, I'm going to go in and vote, let's say Republican for president, there's a really good chance they're going all the way down the ballot and voting Republican. Same thing with Democrats. And so to the extent nationalization continues, I think Montana will continue to be a red state. But like I said, there are some things in our history and our political DNA that if nationalization isn't so strong, those factors, or something happens more locally here, you could see things become a little bit more competitive.
I want to talk to you later on a little bit about the viability of an independent candidate, which we're all going to get to maybe consider as a possibility in this election cycle. I don't know what the outcome will be, but there's a strong candidate for U.S. Senate. I don't think people might argue one way or another. Nationalization of politics, what I see playing out nationally, I see discussed on the tabletop, dining room table, local kind of level, is this push for holding on to power. You have states redistricting in what I would call kind of mid-cycle. And I was always of the understanding, and I've done a little bit of homework, that you did that after the census, right? You served on a redistricting commission for Montana a handful of years ago.
Correct.
And we did it after that 10-year cycle where you determine your population and then you reset those boundaries. But now it's happening mid-cycle, and apparently there's nothing constitutionally that prohibits states from doing that. So here we go. It's all an effort on both sides to maintaining or getting an advantage, getting a leg up in control. And then you have what I call some political gamesmanship, even in our own state, where I call it the down the hall sprint to file, where wait in the wings. In 5 minutes, you run down the hall, file, and it's all orchestrated. And so there's a real push to maintain control and power. What's your take on that? Is that the new norm? Is that where we're at? And it's just going to continue? And it's just frankly going to get ratcheted up?
Yeah, I personally hope not. I mean, it's not good what's happening around the country with these redistricting battles. What's happening is they're making general elections irrelevant. They're making them so partisan, and where the outcomes are predetermined prior to general elections, where everything's going to be determined in primaries. And what's that going to do to the accountability of our political officials if general elections don't matter as much? The federal government, the Constitution, gives this power of drawing seats and all of that with the states. And so each state, when you look at it, it's a little bit different. Montana, our system is locked into our state constitution. There's a redistricting commission that gets appointed every 10 years following the census. There's some guidance in terms of, you know, districts must be compact, they must be equal as is practicable, things like that. There is federal case law that impacts these things, but for the most part, Montana could never do this mid-cycle redistricting, whether it's congressional or legislative, without changing our state constitution. But you've seen that in some other states. You've seen it in California, and I think maybe Virginia just tried to do it. But whoever is doing it, and with the purpose of just locking in seats that are disproportionate to kind of how their states are voting, that is not good for our representative democracy.
So with this fight for control, and I understand what's at the heart of that. I get it. Both sides view their values and view their policy objectives to be important to them. I'm not questioning that. I'm just the process matters at times. I just don't agree with the end justifies the means. We have to feel confident in the process to get to where we need to be. But it just feels like the approach to problem solving in politics and collaboration is dead. And when I read your book, it was all about accomplishing things, getting things done. We were elected people that would solve problems. There was needed collaboration. There were fights. There's some nasty campaign stuff that went on in our history. But when you show up to work, Montana's about, we get our jobs done, right? It just doesn't seem politically that's our mantra anymore, that collaboration has left the building.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the old political battles. I don't want to say that everything in our political past is gumdrops and lollipops.
No, absolutely wasn't.
It's not. There are some tough battles. But I think people who have been around 40, 50 years understand that it feels much different even now. Everything is politicized. Everything, politics is constantly in our face. I remember a time... and I come from a good Republican family, when my dad was watching the 1992 presidential election, and Montana actually gave a plurality to Bill Clinton, who beat then President George H.W. Bush. And he was like, oh, geez, this is just Jimmy Carter 2.0. And I was just like, wow, this is, you know, I was in high school at the time. I'm like, wow, this is, but then you know what? He went to work the next day and just, That was the election was over. You go on with life. And I don't know if we go on with life anymore.
I think we move forward well.
We just like now it's about, well, now we need to undermine them. Now we need to whatever. And sometimes I think elections have consequences. Sometimes those consequences are good or bad. And I'm not saying people need to retreat and step back, but it's not healthy for everything to be political all the time.
No, we see what we get. It's just this constant churn. We had a U.S. Senate candidate in here, and I listed things that were not accomplished. We haven't balanced a budget in forever.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Social Security's in it. There's just undone work because we're spending time investigating and fighting for control and power. I'm not questioning maybe the... Well, I don't know. Yes, sometimes I would question, what are we trying to accomplish? Because we still have work to do. There's even infighting in political parties. If you're not Republican enough, we're seeing that being played out in Montana. There's an article in Lou Jones, one of the smartest people in the legislature on our fiscal responsibility and budget, is being primaried because Lou was not Republican enough.
Sure.
And so even within parties, I'm not putting this on Republicans, or even within parties, boy, if you're not enough of the philosophy of the day, we're gonna shift and we're gonna move past you because we want just the right person with the right philosophy that agrees with me to be in place.
Yeah, one of the first things that I cover in the book in the 1946 election is Burton K. Wheeler. He was a longtime U.S. senator from Montana. He had been very progressive, very liberal early on in his career, but he had to go at it with FDR on court packing. He went at it with him on World War II, and so he fell out of favor within his own party, and he got primaried as a longtime U.S. senator by somebody from the left that was more aligned with FDR and eventually Truman. And so that kind of set up this whole thing where there were many conservative Democrats who ultimately started voting more Republican in that election and future elections. And so these intra-party battles that you're talking about are not a new thing. They're never going to go away, especially as we have a two-party system. You know, other countries, you know, whether it's Canada, Europe, or even in Asia, they have multi-party systems where sometimes instead of just fighting within your own party, you say, well, we're just going to start a new party. And those are more viable, actually, because of how those elections are run. And I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing, but I'm just saying that's kind of the American system. These intra-party battles have been around a really long time, and they're not going away.
Well, welcome back to Voices of Montana. This is Steve Arvascale, your guest host, and we've been having a great conversation with John Binion. John's the author of Big Sky Politics, the new edition. John, it is a great, intriguing read, and we're going to talk here in a second about how people can get a copy of your book. But I do want to talk about, is it possible for Montana to elect an independent candidate? We have a credible, smart, independent candidate trying to get signatures to be on the ballot for U.S. Senate. Is that even possible?
It's a very uphill battle. I think it's very unlikely. So in the book, there's a little section in there where I talk about independent candidates, third parties, and all of that. If you go to our earliest state history, there were elections where we had populists, where we elected silver Republicans to the legislature and things like that. And then eventually there were some legislative candidates that ran as independents, either because they were chased out by one of their parties or, you know, they didn't win the primary, so they filed as an independent. But in the instance of having an independent option, especially when you have two other candidates from the major parties, a Republican or a Democrat, it ends up typically just splitting the vote of the non-dominant party.
Do you think money makes a difference? Because I just looked at the financial reports. I mean, Seth has generated a lot of campaign contributions.
Yeah, so money always makes a difference in politics. That's why candidates have to spend a good chunk of their time just dialing for dollars. And it's not a fun thing. I've been a candidate myself. I do not miss having to dial for dollars. So, but it's not the only thing, right? Because we have elections, even since Citizens United and all of that, where whether it was direct money, whether it was indirect money, it was the candidate that didn't have the most money that still prevailed. And so you absolutely need money, but it's not the only factor.
So, John, I think we've piqued the interest of our listeners on Voices of Montana today. How can they get a copy of your book?
So if you have a local bookstore in your area, I think by now a lot of them are carrying it. If they're not, you can ask them to carry it. The other thing is if you go to www.BigSkyPolitics.com. There is a way to order it through there. I did this with the Montana Free Press. I want to give them a shout out. They're an online news organization. And when I went to them and said, hey, how about publishing an actual book? They're like, yeah, sure. So
good for you. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, grab a copy of that book. John, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure having you in studio today. Welcome home. I know Billings is home for you.
Thank you.
And all the best to you and your wife and your son as he continues to grow. What's his plans? Any political future there?
No, absolutely not. Maybe we may have gotten that out of the family system.
So. Okay. Well, all the best to you and your role with the foundation work. And you guys are doing great work across the state of Montana. We really thank you for that. Thank you, John, for being with us today.
Thanks, Steve.
On Voices of Montana. Hey, tomorrow, I am so excited. John actually can relate to this. We're headed out to the track tomorrow on Voices of Montana. We're going to be at the track meet with the Montana Special Olympics. We've got young men and women athletes who are so proud to be a part of that adventure. So we're going to be broadcasting live from the Special Olympics at Lockwood High School tomorrow on Voices of Montana.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.